you get to control the level of the situation, as opposed to, you know, these guys you see all over conservative shows and radio are like, yeah, I go for the eyes, I go for the throat, because I'm not limited by sport. Well, actually, you're so limited because you can only make it work if you can get to the eyes and, like, end someone's life.
Well, not to mention, I know, you know where my eyes are, and I know where your eyes are.
And balls.
And anything. Bottom line is, whatever you can do, dirty techniques, I can do those too, so that we're neutral. We're the same, exactly. Okay? So now that we've neutralized at that level, let's go to a level of, okay, what else can you offer to the situation? And positional dominance, controlling the distance, managing the dangerous strikes are skills that really jiu-jitsu provides in an amazing way. And people will say, oh, well, jiu-jitsu doesn't work against multiple attackers.
Nothing
is the common rebuttal. I'm like, yeah, well, bring me the art that does. I'd like to meet that person. Me and my brother would like to meet that person. And then...
This is not the first time this next guest is here on the program. We had him when the show was just getting its sea legs, and now it's back because he's back because it ties into a news story. I didn't even know this before going into this. You can go to GracieUniversity.com, of course, part of the legendary family that created the UFC. Henner Gracie, thank you, sir, for being here.
Honor, man. I'm just glad that we're far enough away where you can't get your hands around my neck. So
I can't get my hands around your neck. Good Lord. You and your false humility. actually, my neck's gotten a lot bigger with the back injury, so I fat shame myself on air, so that way I can go back and then feel good when I lose weight. The story happened. I mean, there are a few things to get into. You're obviously a coach for Ronda Rousey. They're just monumental, the biggest, you know, female in all of athletics right now. But the story happened, you know, this terrorist attack in France that was thwarted by Americans. Now, I read about this. I wrote about this on the site. I didn't know a key piece of information, and you filled me in on that. So why don't you fill in our audience who may not know?
Right, and I'm sure the audience knows all, you know, most of the general details regarding the incident. The train was riding from Amsterdam to Paris when a man comes out of the laboratory with an AK-47 pistol and a knife of some sort, like a box cutter of some sort, and has an AK-47 with 9 magazines. Of ammunition ready, basically 200 plus rounds, and is ready to wreak havoc and kill lots of people on this. You can assume, right? Presumably that he's going to kill a lot of people. And there's 500 people on the train, and the train car that he came out with the weapon to, you know, kill the initial, I guess, subjects or targets of his attack. There were 3 American guys, and one of which was an off duty U.S. Air Force member who trains jiu-jitsu at an affiliate of the Gracie family in Portugal, in Lisboa, Gracie Lisboa. And this guy is sleeping, and he wakes up to a commotion and a few AK-47 rounds that went off near the lavatory in between the train cars. And he wakes up, and his buddy who's sitting next to him, who I think his name is Alex, this guy, Spencer Stone is the name of the jiu-jitsu student and the man who initially charged at the AK-47. So he wakes up, and Alex says, hey, let's go. But he doesn't even know what we're going for. He just knows that something's happening crazy. And
it's
Alex
a
says,
nightmare.
He looks up, sees an AK-47 down at the end of the hall or down at the end of the aisleway in the train, and just starts running. This is based on his kind of recollection of the event. He said at that moment, the guy was either the gun had jammed or he was trying to cycle a new round or he wasn't very proficient in utilizing it. But he was messing with the gun and it wasn't shoot ready. So lucky for Spencer Stone, he kept charging, went straight through, get a hold of the guy, starts to try to tackle him. Alec and Anthony, the 2 other gentlemen who were with him, 2 other American friends, and they were both on vacation in Europe, charge in, start grabbing the AK, and they're tussling for it. Another British man named Chris Nolan, goes in there, and he basically is grabbing and striking too. And
I think Chris Nolan is the director for Dark Knight. I think you might be mixing it up, but continue.
So Chris something, the British dude, goes in there all scuffling for this guy's weapons, and then Spencer gets behind the guy, puts him in a chokehold, a jiu-jitsu, rear naked choke.
Yep.
Applies pressure. He's holding. The guys are able to take the AK. He pulls out a pistol. They take the pistol. Then he pulls out a knife and starts stabbing Spencer. And at that point is when Spencer's ligaments and thumb nearly get severed off. I mean, really almost cut his thumb off, cut his neck. And he's holding. He lets him go, pushes him down. They all start punching at this guy. He drops the weapon. They take all the weapons. He gets back up. He puts the choke on again. And with the choke in place, he's able to render the man unconscious. They're able to tie the guy up with what looked to be like seatbelts and ropes and T-shirts. Basically tied this guy up kind of belly down, handcuff position, prone, with his feet tied to his hands. So it was pretty amazing that this was able to happen. And my brother and I did a breakdown and reenactment and kind of discussed three lessons that we took away from this. And, you know, it's just so cool to see that he was able to engage so quickly, so selflessly. And I know for sure, because it's where all of my conviction and confidence and my willingness to engage in anything, not just a physical altercation, but in any aspect of life or any challenge, as you know, comes from the confidence that jiu-jitsu gives us. And to know that jiu-jitsu played a small part in helping render this guy, you know, unconscious and ultimately subduing this terrorist is nothing short of remarkable. And I said in the video that my brother and I made, like, it's times like this where I wish my grandfather was still alive so that we could say, "Grandfather, listen," and like speak in a very simple language like he liked, and say, "A man in, you know, France was trying to kill people with an AK-47. He's like, "Yeah, I know the AK. Yeah, that guy was choked unconscious by a man who does jiu-jitsu with one of your son's affiliates, Hoyler's affiliates in Portugal." And if he could wrap his head around that and know how far jiu-jitsu has traveled based on his efforts, it would be an amazing thing. But unfortunately, he's not with us anymore.
This is true. Well, then also in his later age, they sort of, that filter leaves, and he probably would go on an anti-French tirade as to why the French needed Americans to save them.
You never know.
You never know. There's just a certain age where it's like, I don't care, I'll offend everybody. And I've read some interviews with your grandfather Elio, and he seemed to be that way. He was to the point, but sometimes you read it, you're like, oh my god, you probably shouldn't say that. And, you know,
at the end of the day, he was running out of time, and to him, who cares what he says? You know, no one's keeping score. And if he doesn't say what he feels, what's it worth? You know, that's kind of where he got to, I feel like.
Right. No, I think that's the way most people will get there. I think we're getting there as a society, too. I mean, here, you know, you have this terrorist attack. There was a time where you had to tiptoe lightly and not offend anyone. I think everyone's just so tired of it, and we're becoming a culture of people who want to be more results-oriented. We've become so scared about offending people. Listen, if it's a Muslim terrorist killing in the name of Islam, let's talk about it. Let's just be honest and face the problem. Same thing. I think people now, you see with the UFC that you guys created, are results-oriented in training for self-defense. I was talking about this. And for those listening terrestrially, we'll have a longer segment on LotterWithCrider.com because we know we don't want to bore you with all the ins and outs technically of jiu-jitsu. I was talking with my producer, Jared, here about this. You know, all these real combat, you know, Krav Maga, and this is reality-based, man. I'm sitting there going, jiu-jitsu, all that stuff, that's just sport-based. I'm going, is there anything more reality-based than a terrorist with an AK-47 on a train and 9 magazines? And it worked. Isn't that the laboratory of life? Isn't that – and you hear this all the time. I mean, these things happen all the time. And effective, basic grappling works. Do you think there's sort of a coming home to that, because there's been so much BS, not only in media, but in martial arts, there's a lot of overlap? Do you feel like people are just tired of it across the board?
Yeah, I do. And I think that, you know, you nailed it on the head. At the end of the day, you know, you can't argue with the results. And, you know, if you look historically through all the martial arts, there's never been a martial art that has single-handedly proven to be so effective for the average person.
Right.
We're not talking about the ultra athlete who's given some eye gouging and growing striking skills. We're talking about average person, someone of average physical capability to overcome someone much heavier, much stronger, much more athletic. That simple engagement, which is probably the most likely street altercation engagement you can think of, right? Someone who's the bully or the aggressor or the bigger, stronger, athletic threat person.
Sure.
Against an average person who's not trying to pick a fight, but is just out with his girlfriend, and some guy walks by with an attitude and, you know, spits on him, or has a look or an eye or a tone, or bumps into him in a way
or an
AK. The point is, it's always going to be someone more powerful against someone weaker in these situations. It's most common. And there's no martial art that has proven that ability to overcome that. That's not happening with eye gouges and groin strikes. That's happening with being comfortable in worst case scenarios, right? And at the end of the day, if you're fighting someone who's outweighs you by 50 or 100 pounds and they decide that they want to tackle you, they're going to tackle you. And my grandfather's philosophy was, man, if you're going to tackle me, great, but the fight's not over until you make me say uncle.
Well, here's what.
And if you can't do that, I'll take care of the situation. I'll submit you from underneath you and I'll make it happen. So that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu. It's comfort in worst case scenarios. No other martial art provides the same degree of readiness for the close discomfort of a real fight.
Right. And I would definitely say Gracie Jiu-Jitsu for, like you said, the unathletic person. And if you have people who are in better shape, you can include similar combat sports where you're actually, you know, basically having full-on resistance on a daily basis. What I find so funny, I was talking to my dad about this. You know, my dad's stud, purple belt, never lost a point in the match. at 55 years old. We're talking about this, and you know, the thing, the big thing, the reality. I'm using this term, you know, loosely. The reality self-defense arts teaches. Well, it's too limiting, right? It's for sport. We would eye gouge and hit balls. I'm going, well, hold on a second. Here's the beauty of something like jiu-jitsu or grappling. You want to talk limiting? You could have used this same movement pattern technique in a tussle with your brother and just slapped your little brother and gotten him in line, or with a guy outside of a bar, like you said, who spit on you, or you can use more force and choke a terrorist unconscious and tie him up. He's like waking up like Boris and Natasha tied to the railroad tracks. There's nothing he can do about it. You get to control the level of the situation, as opposed to, you know, these guys you see all of our conservative shows and radio are like, yeah, I go for the eyes, I go for the throat, because I'm not limited by sport. Well, actually, you're so limited because you can only make it work if you can get to the eyes and, like, end someone's life.
Well, not to mention, I know, you know where my eyes are, and I know where your eyes are.
And balls.
And anything. Bottom line is, whatever you can do, dirty techniques, I can do those too, so that we're neutral. We're the same,
exactly.
Okay? So now that we've neutralized at that level, let's go to a level of, okay, what else can you offer to the situation? And positional dominance, controlling the distance, managing the dangerous strikes are skills that really jiu-jitsu provides in an amazing way. And people will say, oh, well, jiu-jitsu doesn't work against multiple attackers.
Nothing
is the common rebuttal. I'm like, yeah, well, bring me the art that does. I'd like to meet that person. Me and my brother would like to meet that person. And then we will engage against that person and prove to them that what art they practice doesn't work.
They argue something that's not, it's like it doesn't work against multiple attackers. Oh, well, you know what? Kung Fu doesn't work against the Acme anvil that's dropped from the ceiling onto you like Wile E. Coyote. Right. So once we start dealing in reality, that if you're going to deal with four or five guys who want to, they're going to kill you. It's like the knife
fighting. What works, yeah. And you know what works against multiple attackers is getting out of the fight, straight up. Getting out of the fight. Now let me ask
100
you
meter
this.
Dash.
So 100 meter, I got to get out. But here's the problem. Against two or three, let's just say two, keep it simple. Against two determined bad guys that want to attack you and assault you, what's going to happen? One's going to hit you. The other guy's going to grab you. They're going to fall to the ground. Invariably, if you stay in that fight, you will fall to the ground because one guy's going to grab you. Okay. Unless it's a perfect knockout, which we've seen on some YouTube videos by, you know, 10, 15 year veterans of the striking arts, which is amazing if they have the physical capabilities. But I'm talking about an art that is actually learnable by someone who's not a gifted freak of nature. So a normal person, right? Let's just assume they're
now,
in a fight.
Hold on one second. Before we continue, for those listening who don't think this ties into culture or politics, it is important if you are a human being to be a truly sovereign human being to be able to protect your life and liberty. You can have all the guns you want. You can talk about the Second Amendment you want. If you're unarmed and you're unable to protect yourself, you are not a truly independent person. Just that's my aside there. Sorry, Hannah, continue, but it's important
to
everybody.
So you're unarmed and you're truly independently walking down the street and two crazy, unindependent individuals, actually interdependent individuals who rely on each other to victimize independent people like yourself, come up and they want to attack you. And there they go. Invariably, that fight's going to end up on the ground. So then my question is this. It's not, oh, who knows best chokes and arm locks? Who is best capable of escaping a inevitable ground fight to get back to their feet and to get away?
Right.
So in jiu-jitsu, if for nothing else, is the skill to get out of a ground fight. And who better to teach someone to get out of a pool than a swimmer? Who better to teach someone to get out of a ground fight than a jiu-jitsu master?
Right.
So we're teaching people how to understand a ground fight. You can't get out of a pool if you don't know how to swim. So learn jiu-jitsu so that you aren't victimized. And what's crazy is that talk about police, you know, brutality, talk about, you know, the whole recent hype on, you know, use of force in law enforcement.
Sure.
When I go teach a law enforcement group, I stand in front of 50, 60 cops who I'm going to certify as instructors in Gracie survival tactics for law enforcement. I say, guys, rule number one, the bad guy always has the ambush advantage. You never know when they're going to attack. UFC, they know when the fight's going to start. You guys don't have that privilege. Number two, never grapple in a street fight by choice. You guys have tools and tasers and weapons and other tools, intermediate force options, that once you're in a ground grapple are available to you and the suspect. So do not allow yourself to be in a ground fight grappling
with the
person. Okay,
one second. We have to go. Keep the lights on with a commercial. We'll come back. Keep that train of thought. Henner Gracie schooling us on how to beat terrorism yourself with your bare hands. Louder with Crowder. Stay tuned. We are back with Henner Gracie, who was talking about training law enforcement, and I'm sorry to step on your toes. Continue.
So rule number two when training law enforcement, never grapple with the suspect or the enemy by choice. The idea that you have weapons, tools, tasers, baton, chemical sprays, you know, all of these opportunities to basically use intermediate force if you can create distance. But if you're in a grapple, they're available to both parties. And a lot of law enforcement professionals will say, well, I don't want to learn jujitsu because I don't want to be grappling with the bad guy. As if we're encouraging it. It's the opposite. We teach you jujitsu so that you understand the ground fight. So on a moment's notice, you can disengage and whenever you want, access your other intermediate force options, and then, of course, neutralize the threat in the most appropriate way possible. And then rule number three, when it comes to a fight for your life, there is no tap out. The threat has to be neutralized, and the suspect has to be in handcuffs, or else we don't practice it. So these kind of founding pillars of our program, you know, are really important, because a lot of cops say, oh, jujitsu is growing in MMA, but it's not for law enforcement, because why would we want to be rolling around on the floor with the bad guy? Well, what about when you grab the bad guy, you arrest him, and you're grappling by your choice, and then it turns south where you end up underneath him? How are you going to get back to your feet if you never learn how to swim?
Well, not only that, but if you're talking about, like, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement or people who talk about police brutality, if I'm being arrested, I mean, these people should be lobbying for jujitsu to be taught in the force, because again, I would much rather have a cop who is in control, who can lock me up, you put the cuffs on, and not have to hit me, not have to whack me with a baton. That's the key, and that's what I want to talk about here for people listening, the terrorist issue. I mean, you guys deal, unlike a lot of sort of these let's just call it spade a spade, BS martial arts that go out, we're reality, man, we're hardcore. You guys actually deal with the psychology of it, and that's why you see these results so often. Terrorists, public attacks, whether it's in a pizza parlor or at a public pool, it's about knowing how a situation arises, situational awareness, and controlling it. It comes down to controlling the situation. And if nothing else, if people who don't want to learn how to fight, you know, they'll hear this and go, I don't want to learn about how to fight, but they want to learn how to have situational awareness and control the situation. What do you teach those people when they come in? I mean, an absolute newbie who then goes from 0.0 to beating terrorists with AK.
So the first kind of principle of jujitsu is that, you know, you want to be comfortable with closeness. So when someone comes in, we know that as a culture, Americans especially, hi, nice to meet you, we shake hands. It's, you know, compared to even Brazilian or other cultures, which are much more intimate, hugging and kissing, and European cultures, it's still a very much of a, there's a gap, there's always a safe gap between you and the person you just met. And that's pretty interesting. So that when we get them to the academy, our first thing is, man, get comfortable being closer as you train jujitsu. So we get them in there, we show them a few techniques on the ground, we're grappling, we teach them how to be comfortable with that closeness. Once they're like not all tense when they're close to someone, then we start to layer in the actual kind of skill sets and techniques. The first, most important of which is learn how to manage the distance and manage the damage. And this is true whether you're on a train with a man bearing an AK-47 or you're in a fight against someone who wants to rip your head off with violent punches. In both cases, you want to either be all the way out of the train or all the way up on the guy who has the AK. You don't want to be ducking down by your chair waiting for him to walk by and execute you point blank. So this natural tendency for people to just say, oh, no, versus what Spencer Stone had, as we saw clearly in his report of the incident, he just got up and charged in. That was a very jujitsu principle to say, I'm going to go, I'm going to engage, get as close as possible, as fast as possible. He knew that by being that close, the AK has very limited effectiveness. In fact, the only damage that was caused to Spencer wasn't even done by the AK or the pistol. It was done by a knife. So right. The point being, he knew that that weapon was not dangerous if he was so close to the person. And this ability to be comfortable with closeness, manage distance, manage damage, it all boils down to teaching them the techniques. And once they build the confidence in the academy, then it goes back to the ability to avoid fights, be more aware of your surroundings, and ultimately prevent fights from happening, because people who fight are people who have something to prove. But if you are able to prove your capabilities every day in the gym, you don't have to go out and puff up and feel the need to, you know, aggress people outside a bar or wherever.
That's so big, too. That's pivotal, because I want to say something, and this is going to be politically incorrect. People will talk about how they're Americans and they were so brave and the heroes. All of that is true. But it's not just bravery. People need to understand that this is a situation where they had been before. Not exactly, but it wasn't false bravado. It was familiarity with a situation. So it's really, really easy to say, oh, just brave. These people are just brave heroes. Well, you go, okay. But what led to that bravery? And that's something that everyone can learn. You don't have to depend on someone else for that. That's the mind. That's the psychology of it. Another thing, too, you mentioned the box cutter. It's very important. You know, this is more right-leaning politically. Henry Gracie's not here to talk politics. But so a lot of people are into tactical weaponry, guns and knives. A knife is a horrible defensive weapon. There's no such thing as knife fighting. It's an assassination, right? If you take out a knife, you've now escalated it. It's not like a gun where someone's going to go, okay, hey, walk away. People out there need to know that, because we've had a lot of people even maybe come into the studio with a knife. Like, this is my defense. Well, it's going to come down to a physical altercation with a knife. And you can do all these silly little, you know, Steven Seagal knife fighting moves all you want. The fact is, you're not going to see a knife until it's inside of you. And the guy who's going to win a knife fight, it's not like a gun. It's not a mechanical advantage. It's still a physical altercation, and someone's getting stabbed. So you see a lot of these, and we just had another stabbing out there in Detroit. And, well, it's not really news because it's Detroit. Anyways, that was just for the listeners to hopefully educate some people out there walking around with pocket knives who, God forbid, you have a Swiss Army knife. That'll just fold on your fingers like a paper cutter. Switching gears, Ronda Rousey, you're one of her coaches, obviously, grappling coaches. She is like the biggest star in all of, I mean, arguably in sports right now, but certainly the biggest female star. You were with her for a long time. What's it been like watching that rise? It's become a cultural movement. It's like a new feminism. It's not burning bras, you know, smoking pot. It's like women want to see this strong chick who's out there making it with her achievements. It's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, no, it's been spectacular to be part of it. And it just kind of comes full circle, right? To have been involved and to see the creation of the UFC over 20 years ago, by my father and, you know, his partners way back when, and to kind of see how that was a shock to the culture then. It was like, you know, the AED, you know, to the heart of martial arts in America. Literally, it just boom, it just jump started something and started an entirely different movement. And it feels very similar to what Ronda is doing right now for women's athletics, more specifically women's MMA. She's giving it a jump start that only a star like herself could do, you know, and it really took Ronda to begin that movement. And she's not just another MMA fighter. She's truly an exceptional athlete.
Oh, geez, I'm sorry. I realized we have to go to a break. I didn't realize what time it was. Okay, stay around. Henner Gracie, go to louderwithcrowder.com for the extended Don Line version where he's uncensored. You won't even believe what he says. It's X-rated. Louderwithcrowder.com. Stay tuned.
So what happens now? We just don't even...
Now you're just online. There's no breaks or anything. Sorry, but we have, you know, it goes on terrestrial and they have to do the breaks. So you can just keep talking about Ronda now. You can say whatever you want. I'll start it off. Urination. There you go. We said a dirty word. Go ahead.
No, so anyways, it's been truly magnificent, and it's just cool to see that, you know, special movements take special people to get them started. And interestingly enough, we talked about this in the Gracie breakdown of the terrorist train assault, that, you know, leadership, right? And it just takes someone to make that first step, and someone has to engage. And it's almost like Ronda didn't choose to start a movement. She didn't have a choice. She is a movement. You see what I'm saying? It's in her DNA. This is just who she is. She didn't change anything about her to cause the movement that she's causing. She simply was brought up with incredible values and work ethic and capabilities. And she has the most incredible skill set and physical set of attributes that I've ever seen in an athlete. And basically, she was just put in the... you know, in the octagon to do. And of course, the precursors to that was, you know, her, you know, other titles that she won in previous events and whatnot, judo, and even, you know, the events that she fought in before the UFC. But then she stepped in there and she was the first, you know, women's UFC fight. And, you know, like I said, it wasn't even a choice. It was just destiny for her. And we're just lucky to be alive when it happened. And, you know, like Hoist did his thing in the early 90s, and it'll never be undone. It'll never be redone. No one will ever redo what Hoist did for... Right. Men's MMA. No one will ever redo what Ronda has done for women's MMA, and it's cool to have been alive to witness both of these incredible movements.
Well, a question, because I actually was thinking of that comparison. I mean, first off, I don't think I'm offending Hoist by saying, you know, Hoist is nowhere near the elite level, like, athlete that Ronda is. That was the whole point, right? He wasn't crazy, intimidating, athletic. He was an everyman who was just had learned jiu-jitsu. But at that same time, no one really knew it. So he was just dominating those guys, and the sport evolved, and you have the GSPs and the Anderson Silvas. Do you think Ronda is kind of at that point where they're just, I mean, she's so far and above, she's leagues above everyone else, where it's just like they don't even know what she knows. She's too far advanced. I mean, do you even see any real challenges for her coming up?
Yeah, I mean, it is tough, you know, and it you know, it's comparable. It's very comparable in the sense that, you know, what Hoist was to the, you know, athletic competitors or the other martial artists that he was up against, Ronda is to her competition. It feels like that big of a gap, in the sense that it's like these women can't even compare to her. And of course, that gap is created by several factors, the most significant of which is the fact that, you know, she's been, you know, 100% committed to martial arts, you know, via judo since as early as she can remember.
Right.
While most of the women who are fighting MMA today began training MMA, you know, not too long ago, 5-6 years ago, even 8 years ago, 10 years ago, you know. So Rhonda is just, it's just in her DNA. And, you know, her mom was a world champion, so it goes all the way back, and she was kind of brought up around that. So
my coach actually used to host them in when they were in Michigan, or maybe he lived in Minnesota back then. I don't know, but he actually used to, like, they used to sleep at his house, and he talked about how just, like, nutty her mom was as far as just being so just always on her about training. Like, he said she was just, like, she was really, you know, she made her train like no one else was making their kids train. And Rhonda wanted it. It is kind of incredible to see. And obviously the only fight out there right now for her that people you never want to belittle an opponent, but Holly Holm, I was having this debate with my friend, actually, Dana. I think you've done it. Dana Lash has another big radio show on her husband, and he was talking about Holly Holm because he's a boxer. He's like, well, no one else knows what they're watching. I've done a little bit of boxing. I know a little bit what I'm seeing there. It doesn't apply in MMA. If you look at Holly Holm, her stance in boxing where she won world titles, it's not even remotely similar to the stance she takes in MMA. When you have to defend the takedown, the hands are down. People go, that's terrible boxing. Look, the hands are down and the legs are way too wide. Yeah, dummy, they have to be because someone's trying to tackle you. She fights Ronda Rousey. All of her kicks are gone right away. I can't see her. Maybe a low kick. So those tools are gone. And then it comes down to hands. And listen, they're women. They don't knock people out generally as readily as heavyweight men, right? I don't see any way she wins that fight. Is that just, I'm almost like not excited for it. Do you feel Ronda runs that risk at some point, like Tyson, where people no longer buy the pay-per-views because they're like, no one has a shot?
I don't know, man. People are buying pay-per-views. I think even Tyson sold till the end there. So I don't know, man.
That's a compliment, but I mean, it's, sometimes it can be too good for your own good.
It does become less of a, let's see if Ronda's going to win or not. And it becomes more of a, let's see how and how quickly and how impressively.
Right.
You know, and that's still impressive. And it's still a challenge. So it's Ronda versus Ronda in some regards. Ronda versus herself. And if can, she can keep topping herself, keep getting better. And you know, there's no doubt that, you know, based on what people have seen and what, you know, Ronda is demonstrating is that she's evolving every single fight.
Yeah, it's impressive.
So I think the excitement now is more, let's see how big of a gap in you know, in progress Ronda has made since her last fight. So I think that can be the hype. That can be the, what people are excited to watch. And with someone that good, the question is always, can she get any better? And the answer is she is. She's doing it every single day. So if not for the challenge of whether she's going to win or lose, people will buy, I think, and people are always going to be excited because she isn't going there just to win. She goes in there to outdo herself every single time.
Yeah.
And that's what I think people are – it's like you can put anybody on the other side, and we just want to see Ronda do Ronda. You know, that's what people are intrigued by. That's why she's become this international superstar on multiple fronts. It's because they're just impressed with her as a person, as an athlete, and as a leader of a movement.
Yeah, and the cyborg thing is obviously the one in the wings that people are talking about. Firstly, okay, let me ask you this, because you obviously, you know, Metamoris, you work with Brennan Schaub. I have to ask you, is there any awkwardness since they dated and they don't date? It's not a secret. It's all over. Everyone knows about that. Is there any awkwardness for you guys? Like, they come in at separate times? You have to keep them in different wings?
No, there's no awkwardness, and they're both professionals, and they're both grown individuals, and they're both great friends of ours, and life goes on. Jiu-jitsu all the way.
So, yeah, there you go. You have to answer it to make me seem like an immature ass. going a little Ariel Helwani in there. Let me get the backroom drama. The cyborg thing, it's one of those where I go back and forth. This is going to be incredibly insulting towards Cyborg, so my apologies, but sorry, not sorry. If you watch the way when she was competing at, I think it was Abu Dhabi Purple, or was it Worlds that she won? Did she win Abu Dhabi Purple or Worlds?
I don't recall.
You know how she won it was by being overwhelmingly stronger than – literally it was just like suplex, suplex, suplex. It wasn't finesse. It wasn't like Ronda. Ronda's very strong, but her technique is, for people who don't understand, is superb. I mean, and you'll be the first to notice that. Her technique with her throws is just unreal. Those are so hard to do. But that's how Cyborg won, if you watch her grappling tournaments. If you watch her, you know, she pulled mount under Gina Carano twice. Usually seems to really overpower opponents. Ronda was willing to fight her. A lot of people don't realize this. Ronda said, okay, I'll win the 135. We'll unify it. It'll be like the first female super fight, right? Then she pops for steroids. That's what ran that train off. So a lot of people now say Ronda's ducking Cyborg because she's calling her down to a division. Does Ronda ever get bothered by that? Or do you as her trainer, where there are people out there saying, oh, she's ducking because they don't really have the full story? Because I mean, that's like the big fight that people want to see, right, for her before her retirement is Cyborg.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, Ronda's been very vocal about her stance on the whole thing. And one thing you learn about Ronda real quickly is that what she says is exactly what she means.
Right.
And you don't have to read between the lines with her at all, straight up. And if she said she was down to do a super fight before, she meant it. And if she said that, that's crazy. Now that she's popping drugs and that she got popped for steroids, that makes no sense because she's cheating. Then she also means that.
Right.
And if she says, I'll fight her, no question. If she fights me and she passed the test and she makes 135, I'm waiting right here. So I think it's a very fair thing. I think that, you know, it's been interesting to see, you know, Chris build up the Cyborg, build up the fight, like trying to pull Ronda out of her weight class. But, you know, Ronda said it very clearly. I mean, or I think it was actually Dana who said it. He said, the champion doesn't need to chase anyone. I have the belt. I'm sitting right here. There's no 145-pound division in the UFC. I'm the champion. If you want this belt, this honor, and to ultimately, you know, carry this title, you got to come to me. Why am I going to leave my chair to go chase you? I have what you want. Come get me. Come make the weight. Do it healthily. And I think that, you know, it's possible. You know, her nutritionist says that she's working in that direction. And I think that it's never been so close. I think that it gets to a certain point where Cyborg realizes that all of the trash talking and all of the poking and prodding doesn't really do much. It's not going to get her anywhere. And it's certainly not going to get her anywhere near where she would get if she committed to making the weight, lost the weight, and actually did the fight. That would be the biggest fight of her career, probably the biggest fight of Ronda's career up until this point, no doubt. And the biggest
My first advice as her nutritionist would be stop injecting the bull testosterone. That would be my first advice. That'd be my Mike Dolce guru-ness. But yeah. Hey, listen, you know all those drugs you're taking? Let's start with ditching those, and you'll see the way. Sorry, you hear that dog barking. Have you ever met Ronda's dog, Mocha?
I haven't met her.
Mocha? Same kind of dog. It's a Dogo Argentino, all white, giant thing that's barking because my wife just came home. But
beautiful. Well, in Cyborg's defense, I think she passed her last drug test, you know, in her last fight. Yeah. So, like, she's. He's like, whatever.
No, listen, but here's the deal, man. Here's the deal. And you're like being such a diplomat about this. I'm sorry. I know you've never been like a huge, you're about what, 205, 210?
195.
195, good Lord, because you've got a big frame. If you weren't a vegan, you'd be huge. So as a guy who walks around like right now, 230, I should probably be.
I'm not a vegan, just to be clear.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Totally honest.
You're a vegetarian.
I'm a Gracie, bro. Life goes on.
Okay. All right. I don't want to misrepresent you. That's the perception then, the Hennergy sandwich. When I think of you, I always think of the Hennergy sandwich. I picture you just like coming out of the womb with an avocado, like, boom, let's make it happen.
Well, isn't a Hennergy sandwich has eggs in it? And isn't eggs non-vegan?
Does it have eggs in it?
Yeah, bro. 3.0. You got to check out the latest YouTube video.
Okay.
Google it. Hennergy sandwich 3.0.
All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to slight you by implying that you were a vegan. But as someone who's done a lot of strength training as well, I mean, you know, we've had Mark Ripto on here who's like you for strength training. And he'll be like, jiu-jitsu, don't do that. And then you guys will be like, the other camp, like, don't do strength training. I fall somewhere in the middle. Once you build up a base with steroids, you don't lose it. That's the thing. It's sorry, once you do it. And it's the same reason the Fallon Fox thing, for example. A lot of people don't understand this. For those I'm sure you know, you've probably had Fallon Fox on your radar because there's a chance that if she gets into the UFC, you know, would fight Ronda Rousey. The hormonal advantage of a man over a woman is so monumental. And then when you alter that as a woman with steroids, I mean, you're talking at like 10-to-1 difference of testosterone. It's a much bigger factor in women's MMA than men's MMA. It's also much more dangerous for women. So for Cyborg to do that, it's not even the same as, you know, like Anderson Silva getting popped, you know, fighting someone like Chael, who also got popped. Don't worry, he's a friend. He's been on the show. It's a huge difference. And so if I were Ronda, yeah, I'd twist that knife a little bit too. I think there's a little bit of mental warfare there where she doesn't think, and I could be wrong, but I think I've heard her say things. She doesn't think that maybe Cyborg is that confident, you know, coming down without some enhancements.
Yeah, I'm with that. And I, you know, that seems like it could be true. And I think Ronda's 100% down. She wants the fight. She just wants to do it, you know, fair and safe and you know, and go for it. But I think Ronda's very confident, and I'm confident that Ronda would win the fight. It just has to be done on an even playing field.
This is true. So you're married now. You're going to have a baby. A little boy.
Yeah. Congrats. A couple weeks from now, newest little Gracie family member. So we're super stoked. First one. And, I've been helping a lot of people raise their kids by teaching them jiu-jitsu and giving them confidence and bully-proofing other people's kids. And we'll see if all the training paid off and I can do my own and do a good job, you know. So it's pretty cool. You know, my favorite part about it is I get to be a white belt again and start at something completely fresh that I have known nothing about and be able to learn a new thing, right? You get good at what you're good at, right? And you kind of stick to the things that you're good at. And it's not often that we get to start something completely new. And I get to feel like one of my beginner jiu-jitsu students who's completely upside down in techniques for the first time. I'm going to come home with a baby and not know how to put the diaper on, and it's going to be interesting.
I don't think you're going to be that inept. You make it sound like you're Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom, like a Disney cover. I don't know what to do. I'm sure you'll be fine. You've had, what, like 125 boys in the Gracie family?
There's a lot, yeah.
There's a lot of boys. Were you pretty confident you were going to have a boy? I mean, it just seems to
run. No. It's not even – yeah, it got to the point where – well, it's interesting. Like, growing up, you always think like, oh, Gracie family, we need to have boys, more boys, boys, boys. Number one, mission accomplished, right? The world knows jiu-jitsu. UFC was created, a whole bunch of people got choked out, and we arrived at the jiu-jitsu is essentially, you know, the new karate. It's the art that everyone knows about, everyone should be learning, everyone wants their kids to learn, is the new martial art. But the difference between this and what, you know, came before is it actually works and is actually effective for self-defense.
See what you just did there?
You
just did exactly what I did, but you did it in a way that seems nicer. I said like, BS, these Krav Maga guys come in and threaten it. And it, like, you say nothing and you make me look like a dick. And then you're like, you know, something that actually works. We all know what you're implying. You're just more.
No, the truth is this. The funny part is this. I have, you know, and karate does work. Everything works for what it was designed for, right?
Right.
One of my best buddies is Lyoto Machida, is one of my best friends. And
right.
When it comes to knocking someone out, there's one of the top guys in the whole world because of his whole life of karate. When I say jiu-jitsu is the best martial art, or when I say it actually works, what I mean is that for a very specific circumstance,
sure.
Which is what? A smaller person against a larger opponent, and a larger opponent who basically is going to tackle you and punch your face into the pavement. So it's a very specific situation. And for that situation, no martial art can give the promise that jiu-jitsu can. And that's where my passion comes from. Not from, you know, I guess deflating the capabilities or the utility of other martial arts, because for what they were designed for, every martial art is perfect. It's just that when you think about a real fight, which is most likely to go to the ground, jiu-jitsu prevails.
Right.
But anyways, I'm excited to be a white belt and you know, having kids. And
well, Lyoto Machida is interesting because he, I mean, a big part, listen, he's talked about it. What allows him to open up his strikes, right? He's being pretty confident on the ground. He's sumo too. He's trained, which a lot of people don't, you know is a legit, you know, grappling martial art. I mean, talk about a guy who's just impressive, Lyoto. I mean, the guy is just, his timing is second to none. But, you know, the reason it matters to me is the same thing when you're talking about bullyproofing kids. I think I've told this story before. I told you maybe off air. My dad really wanted to get us in jiu-jitsu. I mean, I was bullied really badly, right? Picture this, okay? So you're proud Brazilian, right? Well, I was raised in Quebec, French Quebec. And I'm American. And my dad actually had this, and if you don't want to hear the story, you can just, you know, hang up and tell me. It's boring. But this is true. I was really, really bullied a lot. And I was always hard-headed. But my dad realized, wait, we're in French Canada. My sons have to go to French school. They're taking Canadian history. You know, they're not going to know who's on the $20 bill unless I teach them. They're never going to know about America and their roots. And so he always taught us that, you know, national anthem. He wanted us to be proud to be American. Also because there's a rampant anti-American sentiment when you're in French Canada. And so I would go in and I would have teachers and kids tell me how America sucked and all Americans were stupid and fat and had too many guns, right? This is what I was hearing. And so I'd be like, no, you know, it really hurt me as a kid. So I'd stand up for it and then eventually get my ass kicked. It's usually how it ended up going. And so my dad put us in the martial arts. There was a guy who taught karate and he taught, you know, Aikikai Kempo Jitsudo, one of those things was just, you know, made up. And then finally he had seen the UFCs. This might have been 94 or 95. So Hoyce, I know, came in 93 and he said, hey, jiu-jitsu, this is what you have to do. I said, I signed you up for jiu-jitsu at the St. Lambert, at the St. Lambert Community Center. Well, we show up, and the guy who's teaching it is the same guy who taught the Aikikai Jitsu. It wasn't jiu-jitsu. It was jiu-jitsudo, something that he had made up. And the first thing he tried to sell us were these little glass batons for your, like, your keychain, like, weapons.
Yeah.
And so he tried to, but, like, he tried. We just didn't have access to it, and I just got my ass kicked. And I wish that I knew then what I learned later as an adult when I cut through the BS. And, you know, my first instructor was a guy named Fabricio Medici. No, actually, it wasn't. Actually, I learned it in high school. I did judo with a guy named Catalin Guica, who was a Romanian champ. And then jiu-jitsu was later on. And I just wish I knew that as a kid. And so I hate it. It's not so much that I'm mad at other martial arts, but when they lie to kids and they equip them to go get their butts kicked, that's what happened to me, you know? They would tell me, like, you tell that bully that he's only – this isn't a martial arts class. You tell him that that bully is only bullying you because he really needs to work on himself. Like, I'll do that and get the crap kicked out of me because I didn't know how to defend myself.
Right.
So that's where the frustration comes from. You must get that all the time, right? People coming to you who are like, hey, listen, I don't know what to teach my kids. Someone told me you know what you're doing, right? And they just drop them off.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, people fly across the country. We just finished maybe 3 weeks ago. We had our summer annual bullyproof camp and 120 kids from all across the country. 80% were out of state. And they come in for 1 week and the parents are there. And like, you know, whether they've seen a YouTube video that we've done some work or whatever, it's, you know, for us, man, jiu-jitsu actually works. It's the perfect solution for kids. Why? Number one, it works. If you get attacked, you can defend yourself. And at the very least, even with only 1 week of training, you can at least shut the bully down, hold on and not get beat up.
Not get hurt.
And then principal breaks up the fight and both of you go to the office and you're not bloody or, you know, going to the hospital. That's the best victory. Number one. Number two is that if the bully attacks and the jiu-jitsu practitioner is able to overcome the bully with their techniques that we teach them, they're never going to hit the bully. They're going to control themselves. So it's restraint. And we teach the kids that, you know, you don't have to punch the bully in the face. You just immobilize them, neutralize them, and wait till help arrives. So we're not creating bullies. We're just putting out fire with water, so to speak. And then number three, above everything else, is a child's ability to, because what will happen is a kid comes home scuffed up on the playground. Okay, dad, kid pushed me today and tripped me while PE. What's the dad going to say? Hey, go back up to that kid and punch him in the face, or at least go back up to him and tell him, you know, don't ever do that again. The problem is asking a kid.
Take that dress off.
Yeah, asking a kid to assert themselves to a bully, physically or verbally, whatever the parent is inclined to recommend to their child, asking a kid to assert themselves to a bully without teaching them the physical techniques to back it up is like asking someone to go learn how to surf. Like, hey, I'll teach you how to surf without first teaching them how to swim. It's not smart. You can't tell a kid to go punch a kid in the face and not expect him to know anything in response to what if the kid retaliates. Yeah. So learning jiu-jitsu is essentially the foundation that gives any child the ability to walk tall, have good eye contact, assert themselves, and ultimately prevent violence before it takes place because, you know, we would say learning how to fight so you never have to. That's the core of Gracie Bullyproof. It's the core of jiu-jitsu even for adults. The more you learn how to fight, the more jiu-jitsu you learn, the less likely you are to ever have to use it because you become so composed, so calm, and so assertive in how you deal with people that you're not very much on edge. You're not uneasy. You're not unconfident. You're just ready to handle whatever comes your way. And people can sense that. It's like, man, either this guy has a gun or he's a jiu-jitsu practitioner. I can't tell which one, but he seems like he's got his act together. I don't want to mess with him. And that's the vibe you want to put off.
No, you're absolutely right. It's funny that you say – I think jiu-jitsu created that awareness too. When I was at that union incident in Michigan, the footage people didn't see was several guys following me to my car making threats. Now, I looked and this guy was – I mean, you've met – I'm a pretty big guy. This guy's maybe about 5'6", maybe about 130 pounds. And he's following me and he's threatening me and saying he's going to kick my ass to my car. Now, if I hadn't done jiu-jitsu, right, and my ego wasn't in check, I'd go, this little guy, I mean, listen, I could just throw him, choke him, easy. But I'm going, why is this guy 130 pounds stepping up to me, 225, threatening to kick my ass? Probably is armed. You know, usually that's the case. Right. You know, he was very aggressive, shoving me, getting in my way when I tried to leave and walk to my car. And I said, hey, can you just walk in front of me? You know, say whatever you want. Don't walk behind me. Getting in my face. And that was because I knew, okay, there's something going on here. This is not what usually happens in a situation like this. And it wouldn't have happened if my ego weren't in check. You know, I think that's a big thing that's so important too about jiu-jitsu. It's really, you get them every now and then, but it's really rare to get a guy come in with an unhealthy ego who is just, you know, snapping partners up. Do you ever get those guys there in L.A.
Yes.
And you have to kick them out?
Interestingly enough, well, here's the thing. It's one of two things happens when you get an aggressive personality to come to a jiu-jitsu class, right? Because the mat doesn't lie. When you get there, you can have the biggest ego in the world, but literally in one class, I'll have compressed it down to the size of like a walnut, and we'll just put it in a corner because you're going to feel right away that all that ego means nothing if you don't know jiu-jitsu. Like straight up, you're just completely helpless in a fight without these techniques. So you can come in as tough and aggressive as you want. We're able to compress that and just say, hey, calm down, bro. And then right away, one of two things happens. Either A, they flip out and they're upset that their ego and that their pride has been challenged, and they can't accept that their perceived sense of themselves, that they've been story that they've been telling themselves for the last 25 years of their lives, is completely falsified and untrue. So they kind of freak out and they never show up again. The other people, more commonly, 95%, even if they came in with an attitude, after one or two classes, suddenly they're the most humble, most respectful, most in love with jujitsu. It's a transformative environment that we have going into the Gracie Academy and most jujitsu schools around the world. The bottom line is that ego cannot survive and cannot flourish in an environment where it's constantly being checked throughout those white and blue belt years, where you basically, you know, don't know anything and you're basically being toyed with by more advanced students. You know, there's no space for the unhealthy ego there. It just doesn't flourish, especially at the Gracie Academy, where there's an environment of servitude, respect, and discipline, right, to really make sure that those unhealthy egos are not able, there's no foundation for them to even grow.
Yeah, I know you got to go soon, but it's funny, I have a story about that. One of my closest friends at jiu-jitsu, we became friends because we got into a fight in class. So what happened, this is a perfect example of egos finally, and then we both realized we were being stupid. What happened was, full disclosure, I had an instructor who was sandbagging a little bit because he knew I could compete, and he never gave me my blue belt at this point. So at this point, I'm a starched white belt, and I had to win tournament, turn it to get a blue belt. So I'm a white belt, and this guy's a three-stripe purple, but I've been a white belt for several years, and I was doing it six times a week. And I tapped this purple belt guy named James Moore. Hi, James. And he got really mad. And so then he went harder. And then I went harder because I'm the white belt, right? He's a purple belt. I'm like, well, it's not your job. So then I went harder, and he went harder. And then we get up, and we just started yelling, like frothing at the mouth, you know, because he was going hard and I was going hard. We're like, okay, so we were fighting. You want to fight? Let's go outside. And then afterward, he called and said, listen, man, you know, the truth is, I'm, you know, you're a white belt and I'm a several stripe purple. And I honestly, like, I was just, it was ego and I've been having a bad week. And I said, you know, also as a Christian, I said, you know, it's my job to humble myself and ask for forgiveness. And I said, my temper got the better of me. And now he's super close with my dad. We roll, as a matter of fact, to the point where we roll, if it gets intense, we'll laugh and be like, you want to go outside, you know, and laugh. And then he chokes me. You know what I mean? It's such a healthy relationship because it's so hard to hate somebody when you're that intimate with them. And it's experiences, I think, that if people haven't done it, they can't really understand. I don't know. That wasn't right. A question.
No, there's there. No doubt about it. And, no, but it's the truth. You stated the truth. And I think that until you train jiu-jitsu, you don't realize how quick and how intimate and how real that bond is, man. And people come in from all over the world. I've never met them before. They show up. We share the love for jiu-jitsu. We do a class together. We train for an hour. And I feel like we know each other. I feel like, man, you want to come over? You want to, you know, stay at my house? You want to have lunch? It's like, you're just, it's family after that. It's so crazy. And it's so funny that it's so strong that you start to like see someone wearing a jiu-jitsu t-shirt. And just by seeing someone wearing a t-shirt, you feel like you already know them. You're like, hey, what's up, my friend? Where do you train? And you want to care. It's crazy. Like, and there's really nothing else that's like that. You don't see someone wearing an NBA t-shirt. Hey, man, where do you ball? It doesn't happen. With jiu-jitsu, though, it's a very interesting culture. It's a very interesting family. It doesn't matter who you train with. If you train jiu-jitsu, you still feel like, man, there's a bond. We've been through much of the same. And I think that's one thing that holds us all together.
And it's also why it's so easy to sniff out fakes. You know, everyone else like, oh, I'm black belt in Aikikai Jitsudo. Oh, really? Under who? Bob? In jiu-jitsu, if guys like, I'm a black belt, I can ask a few questions and figure out if it's legit pretty quickly because it's not easy to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, who gave it to you? Well, I remember one time I had a guy tell me he was a black belt in jiu-jitsu. And I said, oh, really? Under who? He goes, well, Guy Metzger. Now, Guy Metzger's my dad's gym where he trains. And Guy Metzger's a brown belt. And he's like, I'm not a black belt. He just won brown belt worlds and masters. Guy Metzger, like, he's totally healthy ego. He's like, no, I've never promoted anyone to black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's like, it's completely wrong. And I just kind of played it off when I spoke last time. I'm like, yeah, so how's it going? You know, get that black belt under Guy, right? He's like, oh, yeah, man. You know, I'm going for my second stripe. It's just so easy to trace because it's such a small-knit community. Do you ever get guys coming in and doing that? Like, oh, man, I'm a black belt. It's like made up.
No. Not at the Gracie Academy, bro. I think that's like, that's just too much, right? Come on. Like, you can get away with that, like, in a small town in Texas, but not here in Torrance, like, where this thing is kind of the center of movement. And we know everyone. We can get two phone calls and review anyone's rank and lineage. So it's, no, it doesn't happen. I've seen how some videos and some people and kind of come out different news stories, but not happen in Torrance.
All right, well, we're losing your connection there, and you want to go back because your missus is going to have a baby soon, and you have way more important things than this. Henner, Thank you so much. We have to have you back on. You're good with the news. You're good with it. You should, you know, stick with it. You're good with this stuff. I'm not hearing you.
Don't have time for you.
I'm not hearing you, but it's going away. So thank you, Henner Gracie, and appreciate it. We'll have you on sometime soon. Good-looking guy, 195, not a vegan. My apologies, Henner Gracie. We'll see you next week. If you like this video, you have low standards, but you should subscribe by clicking my face or watch one of these other videos. You just may like them. Of course, louderwithcrowder.com has a lot of things that aren't videos. Videos here, non-videos there. You can do whatever. You just have to make one click here as opposed to typing in the intro. I'm going to get carpal tunnel, and plus you might have gout with the thumb. Just click.